The Arabic chroniclers note their apparition upon the Caspian and learnt to call them Russians. They raided Persia and threatened Constantinople with a great fleet of small craft in 865, 904, 941, and 1043. One of these Northmen, Rurik, around 850, established himself as the ruler of Novgorod, and his successor, the Duke Oleg, took Kiev and laid the foundations of modern Russia. The fighting qualities of the Russian Vikings were speedily appreciated at Constantinople. The Greeks called them Varangians, and an imperial Varangian bodyguard was formed. After the conquest of England by the Normans in 1066, a number of Danes and English were driven into exile and joined these Russian Varangians, apparently finding few obstacles to intercourse in their speech and habits. Meanwhile, the Normans from Normandy were also finding their way into the Mediterranean from the west. They came first as mercenaries and later as independent invaders, and they came mainly, not, it's to be noted, by sea, but in scattered bands by land. They came through the Rhineland and Italy, partly in the search for warlike employment and loot, partly as pilgrims. For the 9th and 10th centuries saw a great development of pilgrimage. These Normans, as they grew powerful, discovered themselves such rapacious and vigorous robbers that they forced the Eastern Emperor and the Pope into a feeble and ineffective alliance against them in 1053. They defeated and captured and were pardoned by the Pope. They established themselves in Calabria and South Italy, conquered Sicily from the Saracens from 1060 to 1090, and under Robert Wiscard, who had entered Italy as a pilgrim adventurer and began his career as a brigand in Calabria, threatened the Byzantine Empire itself in 1081. His army, which contained a contingent of Sicilian Muslims, crossed from Brindisi to Epirus in the reverse direction to that in which Pyrrhus had crossed to attack the Roman Republic 13 centuries before, in 275 BC. He laid siege to the Byzantine stronghold of Durazzo. Robert captured Durazzo in 1082, but the pressure of affairs in Italy recalled him and ultimately put an end to this first Norman attack upon the Empire of Byzantium, leaving the way open for the rule of a comparatively vigorous Comnenian dynasty from 1081 to 1204. In Italy, amidst conflicts too complex for us to tell here, it fell to Robert Wiscard to besiege and sack Rome in 1084. And Gibbon notes with quiet satisfaction the presence of that contingent of Sicilian Muslims amongst the looters. There were in the 12th century three other Norman attacks upon the Eastern power, one by the son of Robert Guiscard, and the two others directly from Sicily by sea. But neither the Saracens nor the Normans pounded quite so heavily against the old empire at Byzantium or against the Holy Roman Empire, the vamped-up Roman Empire of the West, as did the double thrust from the Turanian centres in Central Asia, of which we must now tell. We've already noted the western movement of the Avars and the Turkish Magyars, who followed in their track. From the days of Pepin I onward, the Frankish power and its successors in Germany were in conflict with these eastern raiders along all the eastern borderlands. Charlemagne held and punished them, and established some sort of overlordship as far east as the Carpathians. But amidst the enfeeblement that followed his death, these peoples, more or less blended now in the accounts under the name of Hungarians, led by the Magyars, re-established their complete freedom again and raided yearly, often as far as the Rhine. They destroyed, Gibbon notes, the monastery of St. Gall in Switzerland and the town of Bremen. Their great raiding period was between 900 and 950. Their biggest effort, through Germany, right into France, thence over the Alps and home again by North Italy, was in 938-9. Thrust southward by these disturbances and by others to be presently noted, the Bulgarians established themselves under Krum, between the Danube and Constantinople. Originally a Turkish people, the Bulgarians, since their first appearance in the east of Russia, had become by repeated admixture almost entirely Slavonic in race and language. For some time after their establishment in Bulgaria, they remained pagan. Their king, Boris, from 852 to 884, entertained Muslim envoys and seems to have contemplated an adhesion to Islam, but finally he married a Byzantine princess and handed himself and his people over to the Christian faith. The Hungarians were drubbed into a certain respect for civilization by Henry the Fowler, the elected king of Germany, and Otto I, the first Saxon emperor in the 10th century. But they didn't decide to adopt Christianity until about AD 1000. Though they were Christianized, they retained their own Turco-Finnic language, Magyar, and they retain it to this day. Bulgarians and Hungarians don't, however, exhaust the catalogue of the peoples whose westward movements embodied the Turkish thrust across South Russia. Behind the Hungarians and Bulgarians thrust the Khazars, a Turkish people, with whom were mingled a very considerable proportion of Jews who had been expelled from Constantinople and who had mixed with them and made many proselytes. To these Jewish Khazars are to be ascribed the great settlements of Jews in Poland and Russia. Behind the Khazars again and overrunning them were the Petsenegs, or Patsinaks, a savage Turkish people who are first heard of in the 9th century and who were destined to dissolve and vanish as the kindred Huns did 5 centuries before. And while the trend of all these people was westward, we have, when we're thinking of the present population of these South Russian regions, to remember also the coming and going of the Northmen between the Baltic and the Black Sea, who interwove with the Turkish migrants like warp and woof. And bear in mind also that there was a considerable Slavonic population, the heirs and descendants of Scythians, Sarmatians and the like, already established in these restless, lawless, but fertile areas. All these races mixed with and reacted upon one another. The universal prevalence of Slavonic languages, except in Hungary, shows that the population remained predominantly Slav. And in what's now Romania, for all the passage of peoples, and in spite of conquest after conquest, the tradition and inheritance of the Roman provinces of Dacia and Moesia Inferior still kept a Latin speech and memory alive. But this direct thrust of the Turkish peoples against Christendom to the north of the Black Sea was in the end not nearly so important as their indirect thrust south of it through the empire of the Caliph. We can't deal here with the tribes and dissensions of the Turkish peoples of Turkestan, nor with the particular causes that brought to the fore the tribes under the rule of the Seljuk clan. In the 11th century, these Seljuk Turks broke with irresistible force, not in one army, but in a group of armies and under two brothers, into the decaying fragments of the Muslim empire. For Islam had long ceased to be one empire. The orthodox Sunnite Abbasid rule had shrunken to what was once Babylonia, and even in Baghdad, the Caliph was the mere creature of his Turkish palace guards. A sort of mayor of the palace, a Turk, was the real ruler. East of the Caliph, in Persia, and west of him in Palestine, Syria, and Egypt, were Shiite heretics. The Seljuk Turks were orthodox Sunnites, They now swept down upon and conquered the Shiite rulers and upstarts and established themselves as the protectors of the Baghdad caliph, taking over the temporal powers of the mayor of the palace. Very early they conquered Armenia from the Greeks, and then, breaking the bounds that had restrained the power of Islam for four centuries, they swept on to the conquest of Asia Minor, almost to the gates of Constantinople. The mountain barrier of Cilicia that had held the Muslims so long had been turned by the conquest of Armenia from the northeast. Under Alp Arslan, who had united all the Seljuk power in his own hands, the Turks utterly smashed the Byzantine army at the Battle of Manzikert, or Malazgirt, 1071. The effect of this battle upon people's imaginations was very great. Islam, which had appeared far gone in decay, which had been divided religiously and politically, was suddenly discovered to have risen again, and it was the secure old Byzantine Empire that seemed on the brink of dissolution. The loss of Asia Minor was very swift. The Seljuks established themselves at Iconium, Konya, in what's now Anatolia. In a little while, they were in possession of the fortress of Nicaea over against the capital.